Hello and a very warm welcome to Political Economy with Shweta Poonj. Well, it's been a busy month of February. We had the Union Budget in which FM Nirmala Sitharaman said that India will get a new Income Tax Act. Weeks later, the new Income Tax Act was cleared, passed by the Parliament, and at the moment, it's with a committee which is going through its various nuances and details, and the committee will submit its suggestions that is so different about the new IT Act. What is in it for taxpayers? What is in it for you and me? I have with me to explain this in great detail, Mr. Ganesh Raj, tax leader with EY India. Mr. Raj, thank you so much for joining us. You know, so much excitement about this new Income Tax Act. The fact that, you know, it's an overhaul of the 1961 Act, and India has really never overhauled its tax laws like this. And we know that it's a complicated area. I want to ask you, Mr. Raj, your first take on this new IT Act. Is it old wine in new bottle, which some experts are calling it out to be? Or do you think it is a fundamental shift in the way taxpayers will be treated in the country?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Shweta. Let me begin with it. Since you asked the question as comparison to the previous attempts made to simplify, all the previous attempts, the terms of reference was not only the language so much, but introduce change in policy, shift in the taxation, which essentially means to tinker with the rates, impose new taxes, and change the language in such a manner that it sounds very neutral rather than not overtly revenue or taxpayer friendly and all. But I think this time the terms of references are very simple and very clear. Number one, no policy changes. Simplify the languages so that a common person can read and understand if he or she has to file a return. Number one. Number two was our 1961 Act over the last 63 years had 44,000 amendments. And so for any common person to go through these provisions and understand, even if he's a finance profession but not a tax profession, it really is a very Herculean task. So I think they removed a lot of redundant provisions. Number three is that they the terms of reference was how to reduce the compliance. When I mean compliance, essentially means over the last few years, one would have noticed that there are a number of disclosures, forms for claiming various things were required. So that was putting a lot of burden on the taxpayer is concerned. So that was how to reduce the compliance. And the last and final one was how to reduce litigation, because India is known for its litigation running into decades and decades. And this litigation happens because of the interpretation which is adopted both by the tax authorities and the taxpayer, which gives room for a litigation for either side. So I think that was the fourth pillar for the terms of reference is concerned. These four pillars were never there in the past attempts. So in other words, this was not a case to boil the ocean. No policy changes, go through the language, keep it very, very simple so that a non-tax person or a non-finance person can read it.
So the is it that simple now? Yeah.
Yes.
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 Yeah. Okay.
So the other thing is that what they have attempted, which is really very salutary, is that the structure of the Income Tax Act, earlier it used to be like a law. Now they have made it like a very good reading material by introducing a lot of tables and schedules. What do you mean by tables? For example, let us take one example of TDS, Tax Reduction at Source. We had 33 sections of various kinds of TDS. So if you are an entrepreneur and you are making some payment, you want to read it yourself and try to find out whether I'm subject to withhold taxes on my payment or at what rate and all those things, then you have to really go through, scan through all the 31, 33 sections. Now they are very simply moved into a table. So it is very easy to go scroll through the table and say, okay, I'm making a payment for this purpose. This is the rate of tax. Yes, I am supposed to deduct at this rate. So that is a very real simplification, more than the language, I would think, the way the structure they have created of introducing tables and schedules. So to that extent, to answer your opening question, I am personally, as a professional, I feel really this is a true sense of simplification they have done out of the four pillars, at least in two pillars.
Okay, so let me come to the next point. So you said that the taxpayers can easily access the document, and we ourselves can understand, you know, what do we have to pay, what are our rights as taxpayers, and so on. You know, but when it comes to litigation, Mr. Raj, and we have seen that there has been a huge exponential rise in the number of tax cases that are pending, right, at several levels. What does this new act do to address that? Because ultimately, you know, if a taxpayer has a dispute, those cases go on for decades, if not more.
So I guess the one commendable thing for the committee is that whatever they have churned out, they have done it in a very shortest period of 3 to 4 months. And I feel that probably given more time, they would have addressed also on the aspect of the litigation reduction for future. Now, litigation, there are two parts to it. How to improve the process so that the litigation becomes much faster other than waiting, and creating some new forums so that the litigation can be sorted out. Like, for example, mediation is one process which has been talked about. Number two is that there are a lot of languages, expressions, interpretations which have given rise to litigation. Now, once you address that, saying not only for the old cases which are pending in tribunal, high court, will have some basis of resolving it, but at least for future, the same language and expression will not give rise to litigation. Because either way, you decide the case, it should be in favor of taxpayer or in favor of the government. But at least the clarity is there for the taxpayer, and there may substantially reduce the litigation.
Okay.
So that, I guess, will come forth when it goes to the committee and all the stakeholders give advice. And as I said in the beginning, given the paucity of time, probably they could not do those part. But I'm sure by the next few months, they will also cater to that based on the committee's recommendation.
Okay. So, sir, if you were to give us a global comparison, maybe a number or a ranking on a scale of 1 to 10, how far have we come, and what's the road? How complicated is it still? Is the tax code still? I mean, what are the things that we still need to do to make it genuinely very transparent and very accessible?
So I think in the scale of 10 today, as I said, that these two pillars, which is redundancy, they have removed, and also language simplification and structure of that, I think they have already scored 5 out of 10.
Okay.
The balance 5 essentially is because once you address the compliance reduction and litigation, probably we will be somewhere at 9 or so. 2 is that if you look at globally, there have been attempts made to simplify their tax laws, particularly income tax, both in UK and Africa. And more from a language, texture, and sequencing perspective. And otherwise, they were also as complicated as our law. That's what I understand. So I think I'm pretty sure, not that somebody has said, I'm sure they would have gone for some of the best practices which have happened in terms of rejigging the simplifying income tax law, whether in Africa, UK, and I understand Australia also, to some extent, they did like this. So I think they are trying to bring it as taxpayers friendly, both the construct, the language, the flow, and the provisions, so that there is no room for a confusion and all.
Meera, I also wanted to ask you about the old tax regime and the new tax regime. What does the new IT law talk about that? And what would be your recommendation for people? You know, should we be switching to the new tax regime? Or is the government going to phase out the old tax regime? Is that a sense that one gets?
No. So in the draft bill, simplified bill, they have not, as I said, they have not tinkered anything on the policy side. So they maintain both. But conceptually, I would think one thing before I answer your question, which is a very great novelty in this income tax bill, is that they have brought under a single head all the relevant provision. For example, salary means all sections connected to salary under one head.
Okay. Vis-a-vis, what does it call more?
It used to be scattered and spread out here, there and all. HRA will be somewhere, TDS will be somewhere, penalty interest will be somewhere and all. So, and one of the best chapters, a new chapter they have introduced for not-for-profit organization. In India, you have not-for-profit organization, NGOs and others. So, which we call as a charitable institutions, hospitals, yeah. Schools, sports, other things. So there used to be various sections under the current Income Tax Act where their taxation regime is defined. So what they have done is they have brought all under one chapter for not-for-profit charitable organization taxation. So if you are running a not-for-profit, all you need to look at that one chapter rather than spreading over reams of paper to find out that are you missing something and all. So that is one thing which is there. So coming back to your question on the new tax and old tax regime, the current bill doesn't make any such distinction because they have just simplified the language and the structure, as I said. But I guess going forward, it appears to me that they will navigate towards the new tax regime because every budget, we get the number of taxpayers, individual taxpayers, who are opting for the new tax regime. And slowly and steadily, of course, people are moving in and probably one or two tweaks in the new tax regime. Like they have retained under the new tax regime, medical one. So that is a good thing. So I think going forward, I think we will have only the new tax regime and slowly fading away the old tax regime.
Okay, but is it a more, is the new tax regime better for taxpayers according to you? It totally depends on what your investments are and if you're able to claim the many exemptions under the old tax regime.
Oh, so yes, the attraction of the old tax regime still continues only because there are tax rate is higher, but the exemptions are more. Hmm. So one or two things I can explain to you in this bill, they have very touched upon is one is that conveyance allowance, which is paid by the employer to employee. Right. Under the current act, it was said that if the employer provides a vehicle, because this act was written in 1961, where the employer used to provide bus services and others, and based on that. Now, they are catching up with the new reality is that most of the employees today avail of Uber and others to come to their office and go. Then they say whatever amount which is being spent by the employee for hiring this vehicle to come to office and go back will be taken as a employer provided and accordingly it will be exempt.
Oh, okay.
Similarly, one more thing is that for medical, there used to, under the current act, there is a provision that if an employee suffers any medical ailments and all and is hospitalized, so he has to produce the necessary bills and certificates to the employer to claim the reimbursement of that. Right. Now, that used to be a very big pain point. So to obtain those certificate and all. Now, under this bill, they have done away with the requirement of any certificate for hospitalization. Oh, all you have to produce your medical bill, hospitalization, blah, blah, and employer will reimburse you.
Okay. This is employer reimbursement, not insurance. This is employer reimbursement. Okay. So these are the easier things where you're trusting the task.
So they have attempted to do one or two. I guess going forward, there will be much more of these things.
Okay. Also, the underlying theme of the economic survey was deregulation. In fact, the finance minister also spoke about it, that assume innocence until proven guilty. So, the success of this overall will also depend on how this new legislation is implemented. So I wanted to get a sense from you, Mr. Rajan, what would you like to see the committee do, in terms of reducing litigation and compliances? What are the key, red flags there at the moment, the big pain points? And, what can the Income Tax Act of 2025 do to address those?
Yeah, so I guess committee can do, of course, very many things which can be further improved. But since you raised the topic of litigation, I would expect that the committee to focus on two, three areas very broadly, because India cannot suffer more a tab of tax litigation country and all. The committee should focus, okay, which are the 10 or 20 areas because of which the litigation happens in the income tax regime. So why don't we clarify that so that there is no room for any interpretation for either of the parties, neither authorities nor taxpayer. And I am very clear, if this is the language and I have to pay tax and there is no room for interpretations, hence there is no litigation. I think most of the taxpayer, particularly in corporate side, are they want only certainty and clarity. I don't think so. Nobody's looking for any incentive or not top paying taxes. I think only this room for interpretation in the languages where it triggers the litigation from both sides, government and us. So that is one area which I would think that committee can focus to avoid future litigation. The second area is that some of the duplication, if they can remove. What I mean by duplication is most of the transactions today are subject to GST. Now,
Yes.
parallel, you have in income tax a TDS.
Hmm.
So if they can look that if, and the whole purpose of TDS is not so much of revenue, but essentially to ensure that nobody goes outside the tax net. So if already 95-98% transactions are covered under GST, then there is no reason to have a TDS and all these transactions because then you're duplicating.
Right.
Trade. Another issue that if I am doing a transaction only subject to GST, then when I have to also do a TDS, then should I subject the TDS also on the GST amount, which is a tax amount? It becomes a bit technical. So I think they can make the life very simple by saying all which are covered under GST, no TDS. Those which are not subject to TDS, GST can be subject to TDS. So thereby the comfort burden on the taxpayer, particularly MSME corporates, will significantly reduce.
Okay. So a good step forward, but it's still work in progress.
Correct. We have to wait and watch for another 2-3 months after the committee deliberates and they see the views of the stakeholder. I'm sure there are, we just talked about two areas. There could be a number of other areas which various stakeholders will present it. To make it more simple, less compliance, less litigation. And I'm sure once the final output, what we will see, will be far, far better than the current Income Tax Act.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much, Mr. Raj, for putting this complicated piece of legislation, which is not so complicated, but just with taxation, you get a sense that, oh my God, it's going to be something different and difficult. So thank you so much for breaking that down for us. Of course, like you said, that the new Income Tax Act 2025 has been passed by the Parliament, but it is still a work in progress. And the committee will be going through different, will be evaluating it and suggesting different rules of compliance. Thank you so much, and a big thank you to all our viewers and listeners for tuning in. Do send us your thoughts and feedback, and of course, keep logging on to moneycontrol.com. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.